Hi everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today I am joined by my friend Kat from The Creative Introvert. Kat is my social media manager. She helps me to aggregate all of the really interesting questions that all of you guys ask in the chat box throughout the year, and then occasionally we get together, and as you guys know who watch my channel, we do some really fun Q&A episodes from time to time. So Kat, thanks for being here again today, and what are we going to talk about?
Yeah, thanks for having me. So today we've got a really interesting question. It's all about what happens if we move to Mars? And the question goes like this. Assuming Elon gets us to Mars, what happens to astrology when we become a space-faring species? If I have a grandkid born on Mars or the moon, etc., do we remake the ephemeris? Is our Earth-centric model no longer usable? Curious how the frame of reference changes things. What do you
that
think?
I love that if Elon gets us.
Specifically
if Elon gets us there. Yeah, I mean, so this gets into a really, really important question about the nature of astrology and really the nature of truth. So it's a really deep philosophical question, actually. I mean, you could answer it sort of flippantly in two ways. You could say, yes, it'll keep on working no matter what. It'll just keep on working because, unless the inhabitants are born on Mars, their birth charts will still, have relevance, and there'll probably be a Uranus transit that'll show them leaving planet Earth and going to Mars. But people could be born on Mars. And so maybe the other answer is a new system of astrology would need to be used for a new orientation. A new orientation in the solar system demands that there is some kind of new system. So some kind of new zodiac. I think I'm open to either of them. And that's what I think is so interesting about astrology is that really, I think either answer works. And if that's the case, if Earth-born inhabitants could continue using an Earth-centric astrology after migrating to Mars, why would that be the case? Or if, let's say, you could create an entirely new system of astrology from a different orientation in the solar system and it would still work, why would that be the case? And that has to do with really what I feel like is the underlying epistemology of divination itself. So you have to start with asking the question, like, what is astrology? What kind of claim to truth does astrology make, or how does astrology make its truth claims? What kind of reality that if reality provides astrological truth, then what kind of reality is it that could produce such kind of truth? And you have to ask those questions philosophically, which is really something that I emphasize quite a bit in my programs, because I think it's really important to think about these things. There was a really great book that was written by Jeffrey Cornelius called The Moment of Astrology, Origins and Divination. And he makes the case in that book, and it's probably one of the most famous sort of philosophical books about astrology ever written. And he really makes the case as an astrologer himself that astrology is a mode or form of divination. Forms of divination themselves posit many different models of truth, systems, languages, the I Ching, the tarot, the Chinese zodiac, the sidereal zodiac, the tropical zodiac. There's different, all different systems of symbols, correspondent symbol systems. And in those systems, the planets stand in as signs or omens that indicate or point to different kinds of events, or they describe different kinds of events, or they predict them, but they're not thought to be causing them. So I've used this example because it's really easy to grasp in tarot or the I Ching. If you pull, if you use your Yarrow stocks with the I Ching and you get a specific hexagram, it's a kind of a numerical form of divination, or if you pull a card in the tarot and that symbolism describes or predicts something accurately, nobody mistakenly thinks that the card or the I Ching hexagram is causing that thing to happen. So it stands in as a sign or an omen. Similarly, ancient astrologers, the astrological tradition comes from such a view of truth that the planets give signs, that the planets stand as omens, that the reader in the process of reading is oracular, which is to say, just in the same way that if you go on a walk in your neighborhood And we were walking the other day and my wife saw a hawk. And she, that hawk is a very special animal for her ever since she's been like a little girl. And it gave her just a little internal nudge on something that she was wrestling with. So often the appearances that speak, that hold symbolic power to guide, instruct, describe, predict, we have to ask ourselves, what kind of reality do we live in that a hawk comes along and it's not really causally connected? Like, it has its own agency, its own autonomy. It's not literally an angel, but it has the ability to, it has some kind of power to speak angelically, you know, in this way. So what kind of reality do we live in that such a thing is possible? And if you spend enough time thinking about that, what you come to realize is that the nature of divination, whether you're reading liver entrails or tea leaves or, you know, all these different tortoise shells and the way that the tortoise shells crack when you heat them, all of these different things are basically, they operate in one way. There's a closed system of symbols that has, the closed system is delineated by some kind of law of nature, the shape of a turtle shell, a 64 numerical sequence with potential interactions of numbers, the I Ching, the patterns of the planets and their synodic cycles, the solar year, the lunar month. So you're looking at some kind of pattern in nature, and that pattern, because it repeats and it creates a contained system, that within that system, the elements or aspects of that system can start to stand in as signs or omens. And basically that creates this this, you know, divinatory platform. For example, one of my previous students or former students, she would gather stubs from her movie tickets, and she put them into a lunch box, like one of those old lunch, like tin lunch box that kids took to school back in the day. And she would put them in a lunch box, and then when she, just like tarot, when someone had a question, she would open it up, and she had like hundreds of these, and she would pull a movie stub, and the movie or something about the movie or an actor or something, you know, contained within the relevance of that matrix that the movie represented would speak. So people have always used the same idea. There's 300 movie stubs in a lunch pail, right? And there's certain information that's contained within this system, and I use it. So that's, there's something about truth that is willing to participate in that way of knowing. And the point is that in this regard, if you were to move to Mars and come up with a new system, a closed system based on the observations of patterns in the sky from that area, and apply the same kind of symbolic rigor and logic that ancient astrologers did, which is quite sophisticated. It's not just like, it's not nearly as simple as just putting 300 movie stubs in a, you know, which is a great idea. It's very innovative, but the way that they pieced together the zodiac was really sophisticated. So it'd be kind of like you'd need a team of people, like almost like our modern physicists, to get together and look at the patterns of the heavens and put together some symbolic relevance around that closed system, which I think immediately, because of the nature of truth in the human consciousness or in our relation to reality, that it would speak. It would very easily speak. But at the same time, if there's any rootedness or if there's any relationship with the orientation of the Earth that's perpetuated in the migration to Mars, it's the orientation is really what matters. In other words, the orientation is kind of like your psychic, you know, it's like the meaningfulness of the hawk is what makes the hawk on the branch relevant to my wife. So there's an orientation there that that allows the hawk to speak really in any setting. So similarly, if you're on Mars, but you still have some kind of rootedness in the orientation of Earth, then I don't see why the same exact system couldn't work. And that's, all of that has to do with the nature of divination itself and the underlying, essentially what we're saying about truth and the underlying epistemology.
Yeah, thank you for the answer. And it was just making me think about, I mean, you emphasized this idea of a closed system. And I think that's really key, because I was talking to a friend the other day, and it's quite easy to talk ourselves into, well, if the sidereal zodiac can work, the tropical zodiac can work, all these different house systems can work, then like, does everything work? And it kind of starts to fall apart, and then mm-hmm. you have an existential crisis. So trying to get back to that closed system and what that means in the context of what you're doing, like that hawk probably didn't mean the same thing to you. And that's the important thing. That's right. That becomes the closed system of like your wife's like life is the closed system.
Yes, exactly. Her life, her narrative, her biography, her experiences with the hawk make the hawk capable of speaking, because it closes in the relevance of the hawk in a way. In very similar sense, I tell my students in my programs, in my year one program, we limit the signs and omens that we use to the traditional seven planets and the traditional closed system of Hellenistic astrology, maybe a little bit of medieval astrology because it was so similar to Hellenistic astrology, or maybe even Indian astrology a little bit. The zodiacs are different, but the system of delineating the symbols is so similar between East and West. So they're still more similar in that regard as closed systems. But when you say closed system, people think, well, I don't want to be closed-minded. But it's not the same thing. It's essentially like telling someone that it's the closed system of a particular scale in music relative to a particular key. That actually, if you lock into it and you get to know that closed system, like let's say that scale well enough and its intricacies and associations well enough, then improvisation and something outside of the closed system can flow through really, really easily, really fluidly. So closedness and openness, as the Tao Te Ching teaches us, are very intimately related. So you actually need a kind of structure, a discipline of craft, a certain economy of craft in order for the most fluid and eloquent and precise articulations of the system to actually work, which will be the most intuitive as well. For that reason, it really doesn't work very well, in my own humble opinion, to try and merge all systems into one system or something like that. Even though there's been new articulations, like new systems, like I would give some credence to human design, for example, which is a blend really of astrology and the I Ching. Okay. There are perhaps novel systems that can come about that have some kind of blend, but they're still closed. Like that system is still closed if you look really carefully at it. So the point being that a closed system can travel. You know what I mean? Like you can play jazz on Mars just as well as you can play jazz here. And for this reason, in another video that we're going to be doing, this is also specifically why people often get really confused when I tell them that it's really not essential that if you live in the Southern Hemisphere, you flip the zodiac. It's the exact same logic at work, that it's not really rooted in the literalness of all of the seasonal or causal dynamics that it employs metaphorically.
Yeah, it makes me think about when you first start learning astrology and how at that point the symbols, the planets, the signs of the zodiac, they're all still quite broad and like nondescript, and that makes it harder to do. And you can't, well, I couldn't be as intuitive when things were still so loose. When they started to get more defined, that's when the intuition could start to sort of flow, which is weird. It's like the closeness made the sort of openness occur.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's precisely how it works too with the tarot. Like if you're learning the tarot and you never have a spread with cards that have specific positions, it's really hard to locate the cards in time. Like a past, present, and future spread gives you the kind of linear closedness so that the cards can assume fixed relevance and have more contextual specificity. So you always need that interaction of symbols. One of the main reasons that I think a lot of people turn to ancient astrology is not so much that modern astrology doesn't have anything interesting or intelligent to contribute. It's that ancient astrology places so much more of an emphasis on having symbols in fixed sign, fixed meanings, fixed delineation patterns. And that actually allows people to kind of get grounded and then feel a lot more intuitive. Whereas in modern astrology, I mean, not all the time, but a lot of the times the experience that people have is of things being so highly subjective that it's hard to feel grounded in knowing specific uses of symbols in specific contexts, especially when it comes to predictive work or forecasting.
Yeah. So I hope that reassures everyone in case we do move to Mars and we'll have something to work with.
Yeah, totally. That was a great question. It actually comes from a friend of mine, friend/client that I've had for, you know, a long time. And I will just say on the side that he flies airplanes and helicopters and he's like totally into spacey stuff too. So just props to him for asking a really fun question. Well, thank you for being here, Kat. You can check Kat's work out at thecreativeintrovert.com. Really appreciate her work. She's been doing a lot of really interesting things lately, so make sure you go and check her work out. She's also a really great astrologer, has really great interviews with people on her channel, so you can check her channel out too. It's on, what's the connection to your channel again? Remind me of the link.
Oh, just go to, just search like Kat Nelligan, I think, on YouTube, or just The Creative Introvert. You should be able to find it.
Kat Nelligan or The Creative Introvert. Yeah. Okay, great. Well, that's what we've got for today. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you again next time. Bye.